And now our regular guest Joan Lewis is here to share some reflections about her recent visit to northern Iraq for the installation of the new Bishop of Erbil.
Good to be back in town. I've had, as you well know, another incredible trip to Iraq. And when I went in February, one of the points that most struck me at the time was the fact that the Diocese of Erbil in Iraqi Kurdistan hadn't had a bishop in 5 years. So one of the points that I would talk about in speeches and write about was, wow, a diocese without a bishop. And then I get word in May that the Father Bashar Warda, who was the rector of the seminary where I was a guest in February, had been named the bishop. So got an invitation to go back, accepted the invitation, and it was one of the most joy-filled weeks of my life, to be honest with you.
And to be able to attend his consecration bishop in the diocese.
And the installation mass. And again, the joy there was amazing. And of course, the bishop who for 5 years in Erbil had been the administrator was also there, and people had really come to love him. He was there very infrequently, though, from his own diocese of Ahmadiyya. So he was there for liturgies and a lot of important events. But again, a diocese without a bishop, there are certain things, according to canon law, that only a bishop can do, that an administrator can't. As he might have been a bishop, but he could only do it in his own diocese.
So these things have all been on hold for 5 years.
Oh, yes. And in fact, Bishop Bashar told me, I interviewed him, and he told me that, for example, 2 years ago, the civil authorities in the region, in the city of Erbil, came to the diocese, but administrator again, and said, we want to build a hospital here. We want you to build a hospital. We know how good they are. We know that there's all sorts of Catholics and Christians who are doctors and nurses. And that's true. And the offer was not accepted. So now that's one of the first things that Bishop Bashar wants to do is to get this hospital built, get it up and running. They need one, obviously a good Catholic hospital. And the Muslims will go to these too. This is no problem. The Muslims go to Catholic and Christian-run schools like you can't imagine. They know they're going to get a good education. They know they're going to get values in the schools.
What kind of percentage of the population is Christian up there in Erbil?
Erbil is a Muslim city, basically Muslim. You have Catholic parishes here and there, and then there are Christian, there are Assyrian, Orthodox, and so forth. But it's a very, very small percentage in Erbil itself. Now, right now, next to Erbil is the smaller is a town, because Erbil, I think, is the third largest city in all of Iraq, and it is the capital of Iraqi Kurdistan. But right next to Erbil is a town of about 25,000 people called Ankawa. That's all Christian, and mostly Catholic among those Christian. So the sad part is you're looking at an Iraq that, before 2003 was 1.5 million Christians. Again, always a minority. But 1.5 million, and now it's around 400,000. So, yes, many have been killed. Mosul is the absolute worst city, and I learned when I was there that the U.S. Army patrols that, and there are 18 Iraqi Army battalions, and there are, I never went in the city, and actually, I have to tell you, I don't think I would have gone had I been invited. And then there's like roadblocks every 2 or 3 blocks, so security checks. So that is very, very dangerous. And all the terrorists have to do is abduct or kill a person. The whole family leaves the area and they'll move to Kurdistan. So one of Bishop Bashar's new problems is that there might have been 2,000, 2,500 families 5, 6 years ago, and now there's like 7,000 families. And so you have to find homes, you have to find jobs.
One of the big challenges is finding work. But if you're talking about the constructions, for example, of hospitals or perhaps other schools,
sure,
then this will help to encourage people to stay,
for sure,
won't it?
For sure. The hospital will be wonderful. Bishop Amel Nona of Mosul. Now, he lives right in the city. I can't tell you how hard I pray for him every day. And he's such a wonderful, saintly man. But he does visit a lot of the parts of his diocese. He's now in visiting one city in his diocese for 2 weeks. He's literally visiting every family. And that's what Bishop Bashar is going to do, too, in Kurdistan, where, of course, it is relatively safer. But one of Bishop Nona's dreams is to build a school, K through 12. He'll settle for through 6th grade right now. But what he wants, he knows in constructing the school, he will give work to everybody. He wants Muslims and Christians to be involved with each other. And then once the school is up and running, you're going to have staff, cleaning people and cooks and whatever you need. So lots of people will get jobs. Now, he actually, both bishops know that your average Muslim works well with the average Christian. The killing is, it's outside forces paying your terrorist groups and so forth to kill the Christians. Masses are now being held in Mosul only on Sundays because of the danger. The bishop understands exactly that people leaving their house to go to church may be afraid they're not going to return home, you know, which is such an unbelievable thing that you and I can't even fathom.
And yet you say there in Erbil the situation is much, much more...
Much safer. The Kurdistan, the semi-autonomous region of Iraqi Kurdistan, the government officials there are doing everything they can to keep the region safe. And you're going into the country isn't too bad. You're leaving the country is, wow. I mean, any security in America or Europe couldn't touch this. And that's fine by me. They don't want anybody to be homegrown terrorists leaving Kurdistan and going someplace else. And then you give a bad name to Kurdistan because of something that might have happened. But they want to bring business in. Business, again, going to what we just said, is jobs. If you have an income, you can have a home. You can obviously do decent things for your family. So that is a very big concern for them, is all the jobs. And actually, I have to say, there seemed to be a wonderful interaction in Kurdistan between the civil authorities and the religious authorities, Christian, Catholic or otherwise. There are many, many buildings. The seminary where I stayed is one. Kurdistan gave the Chaldean Church $7 million and 25,000 square meters of land to build this magnificent seminary and monastery. But the thing is, the government there recognizes Christians are traditionally the better educated. They're your doctors, they're your lawyers, professors, engineers, whatever. They're the people who are capable of running a government, a country, of running a big company, of being CEOs. Not to exclude people who are not Christians, but that is just in that country, that is just the way the case has been for decades. So they know the Christian contribution to society. And that's why they're trying to accept those who unfortunately do have to flee from Mosul or maybe even Kirkuk or Baghdad and come north. And they want to help these people, again, contribute to society. You can do that if you have a home and if you have a job. So,
tell us something about Bishop Bashir himself. You know him quite well after these two visits there. He's a very young man, isn't he?
He's very young. He just turned 41 on June 15th. He is one of those people who's almost like a lot older for his age. His age belies his experience, his innate talents. And I learned, somebody told me this, and I had him verify it in an interview. I asked one of the priests at the seminary, I said, where does he get his organizational talents, his amazing ability for details? Because I've said that Bishop Bashir, if he wasn't a bishop, would have been the CEO of an extraordinarily successful company, whatever it was. And this one person told me he got his organizational abilities, his ability for details from his father, who worked in a hospital. I believe he was a nurse and worked in a hospital. He would always be the one to organize things and make sure everything functioned and attention to detail. And Bishop Bashir got his talent for hospitality from his mother, because I guess she was an excellent cook. People always came by her house for dinner instead of going home. And so he was used to living. He's one of eight. So all of his four brothers and three sisters came from Canada, Australia, and Germany.
So they'd all emigrated and found other parts of the
family. He's the only one. He's the only one in Iraq of the family. His parents now live in Germany, and they came down. But the wonderful thing about Bishop Bashir, he has an entire list of priorities. I had someone translate the 9 points that he made in his installation speech. We were sitting down, this person and I, with the bishop later. And I said, you know, what I'm hearing you say, tell me if I'm right, I'm hearing you say that for you, unity and communion, ecclesial unity and communion are very important, and the priesthood. And he said, you've got it. Those are the two main things that I want to concentrate on. Because it's a well-known fact. I'm not talking out of turn or anything. It's a well-known fact, and it came through in my interviews with other bishops, in February, that there is a lack of unity among the bishops themselves. And so Father Bashar wants to create unity. The church must go forward. We must do things for our people, whether it's liturgy or building a hospital. And we have to do it, even if we don't all agree on some of the principles or some of the minor points, we must have this ecclesial unity. And he's very close to his priests. Well, he ran a seminary, of course, for all those years. He was also down in Baghdad at the St. Peter Seminary. So the priesthood is enormously important to him. His priests are enormously important to him. However, he can help them. And he already, within the first days, had a series of meetings to look at what all the priorities should be. So he listens to you, and he listens to this priest and that priest to get their input, to get their priorities, and he wants them to be frank. Nobody's going to sit down with Father Bashar and tell him what they think he wants to hear. It just won't work with him. And he's very attentive to people. I think that particular gift, his gift for understanding how people feel, what they need, is going to bring him quite far.
A lot of the challenges he faces, whether they're internal issues of unity amongst the bishops and priests and so on, or external issues of emigration and security and so on, these will be on the agenda, of course, at the Middle East Synod, won't they, in October?
Oh, yeah.
And I imagine that he'll be taking part in that.
He will be coming to Rome, and I asked him about the Synod, and I asked him if the bishops of the Chaldean Church had had a meeting yet. And he said a specific date hasn't been set, but he knows that they'll have a meeting to firm up their agenda before they come to Rome in October. And it's very interesting because I talked to Patriarch Tuol, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, and he said to me, and I had Bishop Bashar confirm this, that all the different regions of the Middle East feel that their particular problem is the most important. So in the Holy Land, you've got Israel-Palestinian problems. In Iraq, you've got the murder, killing, abduction, persecution of Christians. And actually, for each country, that is drastically important. How to get them all on the agenda and try and give equal importance, I think, will be a very important balancing act.
We'll be following that, of course, very closely over the coming months. But for the moment, thank you very much for being with us, Joan.
Well, my pleasure.
Thanks there to our regular guest, Joan Lewis. He'll be back with us again at this same time next week.